Welcome back to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, your host. True Wealth, as always, is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. Been doing business about 20 years. Soon, I suppose, I'll be able to say 21. Buying and selling all forms of rare coins, precious metals, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds, everything you can think of that's aligned with our business. We like coins and collections and estates. We specialize in portfolio management, wealth and capital preservation. We like to help people build hard asset portfolios. We believe that if you combine the common sense God gave you, history, and the Bible, you'll come to the conclusion that hard assets, precious metals and things like that, is what God intended us to use. I suppose you have to share my belief in the Bible and God. People look right now and they say, well, hey, you know, Kevin, you're talking all about these precious metals and the stock market keeps hitting record levels, which is kind of interesting. I'm not opposed to it. I'm not, you know, the view of it, my view of it is it just, what it really is, technically an inflation adjustment. And what I mean like by that is the fact that we have such extraordinary hyperinflation that it is consuming us from the inside out. It's caused by Keynesian economics, and it's actually part of the entire plan. The system was designed initially specifically, as John Maynard Keynes said himself, as the necessary ingredient for Marxism to prevail. He was a hardcore Marxist, and he actually entered a contest, I believe, for an economic system at a university that would essentially fit socialism. And ironically, this is what we've adopted as our nation's economic system. And I've discussed it before. And, you know, I think one of my biggest struggles is I've been doing the show for quite some time, and time tends to go fast. And I'm always concerned that I've already covered this and already covered that. And I try not to repeat myself, which sometimes makes me, I think, miss some pretty major topics. But if you understand the history of money, of the corrupt Federal Reserve System, it wasn't a new concept. People need to understand that fiat currency, which means declared or of value because somebody says it is, that concept goes way back. I mean, I don't know about you, but maybe it was because I was in banking. But long before I really studied this stuff and knew it, before I read a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island, I had extensive collegiate education in money, numbers, banking, finance, you know, plus post-grad stuff and all kinds of just a lot of experience and knowledge. And when I read The Creature from Jekyll Island, which, by the way, we offer that book here at our store because I think it's such a paramount piece of reality, of truth, and it's written in a way that you can browse through the intro and summary of every chapter within a couple hours. The book's very thick. The bibliography is mammoth. But the book just explains how everything came to be and how we ended up where we're at, and we are now slaves. Our founding fathers considered income tax. Our founders called it what they called direct taxation, and they considered it slavery. They absolutely forbid it in the Constitution. That is why they had to add the 16th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States in order to tax our income. If you look at the numbers of what we spend versus what we take in taxes, taxes are not necessary under this system. Now, that may sound silly, but the fact of the matter is we create money out of thin air and we back it with debt. And we put that debt on the back of the people. And over time, there's been 21 major bailouts, and it's just constantly burying us deeper and deeper and deeper in debt. We cannot, will not ever get out. And that's a little doomy. That's a little gloomy. But let's think about it. I have said for years, the stock market will crash up. Okay. People are always like, when's it, you know, they'll talk to me and say, I think the market's crashing. By the way, folks, if you want to call us, 444-0044. Or toll-free 877-TAP-COIN or through the website coinsplus.com where all of our previously recorded radio shows are available. The last show I did on Monday, there was a recording issue, so it's not going to be on the website for you to review. Sorry about that. Just seems to be the way things go sometimes. And so basically, the history of our currency throughout history, man has always come up with these concepts of how they'd like to control money. And apparently it takes money to make money. And those who are uber rich created what is now called the Federal Reserve System. And if you study the history of the Federal Reserve, you will find out that it didn't happen quickly and overnight. They worked it and worked it and worked it. And what they basically did is they went through. Initially, there was a big complaint of banking becoming too centralized. Okay, and people really did not want that. They didn't like it. They had seen wildcat banks and state banks all go bad and lose all their money. And they had just been fed up. So you would think. So what they wanted was a decentralization of the banking system. They absolutely wanted banking to be localized, which I personally, as a person who was in banking for quite a while, agree with and appreciate. The best banks are always your local banks. In my opinion, if you have your banking relationship with a large mega corporation, Wells Fargo, B of A, I would recommend you leave them and go with a local bank or credit union. There's a number of reasons for this, primarily for your benefit. Local banks have local authority and they have local concern. They can make decisions big banks can't. I know from working for big banks, I worked for Norwest Banks, which became Wells Fargo. I worked for Bank of America as a regional manager over a few different divisions and with exposure to everything from consumer finance and personal banking to the real estate division, housing services, et cetera. And I know that you are seen as just a number and you are seen as a revenue source. Now, the local banks, of course, they've got to make revenue. That's a no-brainer. No one's going to argue that. But the local authority makes a big difference. It also prevents you from paying for the sins of others. In fact, like when we went through the big mortgage collapse, I know Washington Trust locally has been locally owned and operated since like 1889, and they suffered nothing. They suffered nothing because their lending policies had been solid over the years. When I was in banking at B of A, our number one competitor were local banks. There used to be one called American West Bank. I became like super, super good friends with the CEO of that corporation. He was an avid coin collector, and he just was a wonderful man. And he passed unexpectedly young with he got melanoma, and he was just a wonderful person. But his banking philosophy, he loved entrepreneurs. He loved business people. He used to always say, nothing ventured, nothing gained. He'd be sitting in my shop while he was browsing through coins or buying an extraordinary amount of coins, and he would be making loan decisions on the phone. And people didn't realize at the time, but he and I, with our banking backgrounds, would discuss the loans and had a little fun doing it. And also the fact that he was in a pleasant situation dealing with collectible coins, which he absolutely adored, it worked in the favor of some of the people trying to borrow money who'd previously been turned down, but he was in a good mood and it would work out well for them. He believed in the local community. When you get these localized banks, they're committed to the community. They're vested. The big banks will hire people to behave as if they are. I mean, I'm not trying to do a show. It sounds like I'm doing a show pushing who to bank with. I'll stop right there. I'm just going to say to you, there's a lot of reasons to keep your business local, but localized banks are always going to treat you better. If you're ever going to need to leverage yourself, in other words, borrow money, and, as a believer who's listened to Dave Ramsey, you might be going, hey, Kevin, what are you doing encouraging people to borrow money? No. But I will tell you the reality of life, the system that we live in, if you're going to ever have a decent house, you're going to have to borrow money unless you're just worth a lot of cash. It's just a fact of life. Does it stink? You bet it stinks. But it's the system that's now come, that we've come to. There's hyperinflation all around us, okay? I am so aware of it because of my background. The cost of housing has gone through the roof. The cost of construction has gone through the roof. The cost of automobiles has gone through the roof. Technically over time, gas may not be overly expensive right now, but it's not overly cheap either. But it's gone up considerably over time. The cost of electricity has gone up over time. The cost of clothing and groceries and everything's gone up over time. What's really sad, because of what we call the Consumer Price Index, which is supposed to be a indicator, calculator of what our inflation rate is, they intentionally have the Consumer Price Index kicking out numbers in the low, low, low single digits. Like they'll say inflation is 1.3%. Well, the reality is under Bill Clinton, I had a roommate before I got married who was also finishing up his PhD in economics, and he went to work on the Consumer Price Index board. And because that was the area of expertise he specialized in, he resigned under Clinton's administration under ethical grounds, because Bill Clinton had come in and removed the basic indicators, the primary mass of food, transportation, real estate, and energy costs. Of course, they left little trailings in there, so it looks like parts of it still exist, but it does not. And so Clinton removed these things under the guise that the technology is moving too fast, things are changing rapidly, and it was really a way for him to show people this incredible economic growth. Clinton was a president at a very unique time. He got credit, or took credit, I should say, for a lot of economic stimulation that had nothing to do with him. The economic stimulation that took off at that time was what we refer to now as the dot-com craze. It was money pouring into the tech markets at a level never seen before, and it was globalizing our nation. And it is super important for people to understand the Federal Reserve System is dependent upon debt to exist. Under the Clinton administration, when we had these big debates, talks, discussions over the surplus that was coming down the pipe, okay? When we had these discussions, the fact of the matter is there was a surplus and it was big. That surplus in our economic GDP, gross domestic product, was being caused by the inflow of cash from overseas. We were, for the first time ever, becoming a fully globalized economy. We had money pouring in this country from everywhere around the world. There was a time that we had so much of it that we could have actually paid off our deficit and thereby absolved the Federal Reserve System. The problem is you've got so many of these politicians that have either they have an ignorance of all this, but it's also a selective ignorance, okay? It's ignorance is bliss, or dumb like a fox. And why I say that is this. Politics has become a career. It's become a well-paying position for a lot of these politicians. They don't care, seriously, about the well-being of this nation, period. What they care about is being reelected, and they care about talking down to the level of the average constituency. As the constituency, when we look at what's going on in America, the fact that our SAT scores have been, our SAT test levels have been dropped, our average students have, you know, their IQs have lowered, their knowledge is lowered, our ranking on an international basis is in the tank. We're down to the point where in different subjects, basically, you know, like math, reading, science, whatever, America ranks 23rd to 37th in the world. And what's crazy is our kindergartners and first graders rank pretty high. And then the longer they go to school, the dumber they get. Our schools are absolutely decaying the brains of our children. It's a sad situation. It's just we're creating dummies. And now we're creating self-righteous, entitled, spoiled brats who have no respect for tradition, no respect for honor and dignity, no respect for their seniors, their elders, whatever you want to call it. They just don't. And so these politicians, these young people are becoming the constituency ever more, and they have to speak down to these to the constituency's level. What I mean by that is the last thing they need to do is try to explain to them how destroyed this system is because of the Federal Reserve System. All they need to do or want to do, I guess, is tell the people what they want to hear to get reelected. Those who don't do that are essentially blackballed. One of the most ironic examples, maybe an icon for sure, is Ron Paul. Ron Paul believed that the Constitution gave the federal government 9 general responsibilities for the welfare of America. And he tended to stick only to that. Okay, so you've got 9 federal responsibilities from the Constitution. And the problem I have with that is the fact that, yes, he's correct if you go literally to the original document. The fact of the matter is there's no way that our founding fathers wouldn't have thought that the system would need to be grown and expanded. Ron Paul was a purist, and maybe we need those purists sometimes to remind us where we came from. When you step to the next generation, you get Rand Paul. Rand Paul has a very nice comprehension of all of it. Rand Paul includes a libertarian spin on a lot of things. And, you know, in a lot of cases, folks, when we hear debates over things like what we should do for war and things like that, we get, you know, a different mindset. We get the idea from like Rand Paul that, you know, it comes across that we should really be completely isolationist. At least that's how the media spins what he says. That's not what he's saying at all. I think he's saying walk softly and carry a big stick. He's saying we've got enough problems internally with our infrastructure that the last thing we need to be doing is dropping $1 trillion a year overseas on war. With Trump, it's a little different. He's kind of going the other way. He's definitely walking strong and carrying a bigger stick. And, you know, there's people that cheer that on. They say great. They say good. But in reality, you know, he criticized people like the Obama administration for telegraphing what they're doing. And he believed that doing that diminished the fear of these nations. Trump, on the other hand, I would say is kind of going the other way. He's trying to present a persona of incredible strength and power, and he's trying to speak brashly and harshly and roughly, and he's trying to technically intimidate in a way, but more or less reestablish the respect of the United States. The problem that Trump's up against is the media has taken a run at him like no president before. There's no way anyone's ever endured what Donald Trump has endured. They make fun of him. Today I was listening to a video, ask me why, I don't know. I saw something about it on the news, and I watched this video by a rapper, Eminem. The guy's apparently a really good rapper. He's got a really cool voice. Trust me, I don't listen to rap. Not a big fan of it. But, you know, I can tell his voice is kind of hard, you know, it's pretty powerful. He goes on this disgusting, disrespectful, just vile rant against the president of the United States. Just filthy, folks. And we are literally, you know, it's so hard for me not to digress into these conversations because it hurts so bad to see such levels of destruction being taken out on the United States of America. They're harassing, they're, you know, protesting Trump, protesting the flag. It's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable that we've come to a point where 25-year-old minority athletes, you know, thriving strictly on their God-given talent and ability, have used a commercial industry of entertainment, the NFL, as a platform to supposedly protest. Well, bottom line, let's be honest, they're protesting the flag. They're showing no dang respect for the flag. They're taking a knee for the national anthem. And I'm telling you, folks, wow. To me, that is when we have hit the lowest low in this country. The fact that that flag is there is why they can do it. The flag is honor of America. It's American pride. We are filled with illegal immigrants now. They are everywhere around us. They have no respect for the country. I'm not saying every one of them, but to not want to go through the system to become a legal citizen tells you something about their attitude, and we have got to stand up. When you look back at the election of Trump, what happened? Okay, what happened, you know, speaking of what happened, that's Hillary's book, which is just self-bloviation, as she cannot stand the fact that she lost. She can't let herself out of the game, and she wants to go back and beat Donald Trump. She wants to be nominated as the next presidential candidate. That's why she's saying what happened. She's trying to say, I didn't lose this thing. All the cards were stacked against me. I could have won. I should have won. And here's why I didn't. And it's basically what it is it's her resume saying, come on, give me another shot at this Democratic Party. I know I can beat this guy the next time around. No, she can't. He destroyed her. But what I was getting at is the media, the polls were saying he's going to lose, and they pounded it so deep and so effectively that everybody believed it. I believed it. You believed it. We knew he would never win. And I'd already thought, what a bummer, man. Well, how cool would that have been? Well, he blew all of our minds because all the media and all the pollsters had it wrong, which tells you the level of corruption and bias that exists in the system and how bad they want their people to win. If you guarantee somebody over and over and over that they're going to lose, there's a lot of people that will quit, especially if you try to convince a politician that he has no fans, everyone hates him, and so on. So when Trump won, it was like why it was such a great victory was because it was an affront to every single aspect of our establishment system. But the problem is now they just will not accept it. And they are stooping to levels of disrespect and disdain. Folks, there are so many things going on in this country that make me nervous. When you look at the Charlottesville event a while ago that I talked about, where they have witnesses that saw the white, you know, the Ku Klux Klan getting off the same bus as Black Lives Matter, all funded by George Soros. The torchlight parade of white supremacists the night before. of which none were photoed in the crowd the next day. None of them, none of them, none of them, none of them. Where'd they go? Who were they? They were all actors. They were a plant. It's all a setup. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I have the absolute blessing of knowing a lot of men that are in the highest level of special operations in our U.S. military forces, from the Rangers to the Delta Force to the SEALs. I know more Rangers and Delta guys. I know only a few SEALs. But I know Ranger and Delta guys that are at the top. I know Rangers that are the highest ranking, most influential, most decorated, most honored, and most respected men in the U.S. Army. These men are able to write their own ticket and do whatever they want, okay? I got communication from them that this Vegas shooting, okay, immediately after the shooting, what did they start saying? Bump stocks, bump stocks, bump stocks, right? Now, isn't it ironic, as a side note, that they can find nothing on this guy? Absolutely nothing. No motives, no internet searches for anything. Supposedly had a bunch of this tannerite in his car, this explosive. They have no receipts, no record of him acquiring it anywhere at any time. They found receipts for two gun purchases, okay? One is a hunting rifle. The other is a hunting shotgun, period. All of these other assault rifles, supposedly no evidence. There's hearsay and this and that, but no evidence that he ever purchased it, okay? Where am I going with this? Not sure, but I'm going to tell you some interesting questions. First, they were saying that he shot the security guard outside the door during the rampage. Now they're changing the timeline, and they're saying that it was about 7 minutes before. Here's where I'm going. I don't want to get into the conspiracy thing too bad, but I'm going to just tell you what I've been told by very high-ranking military officials. When they heard that this gunfire was going off, when they heard the video and the audio, these Rangers said, that's two guns. That's not one gun, it's two guns. And number two, they said that's not a bump stock. They said that's a mini machine gun, I guess you call it, a 240 MG or M whatever. It's a mini machine gun. It's a 240 mini machine gun with a 308 caliber bullet and a belt-fed clip. In other words, that ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, the belt feed's going in. If you go online and you listen to that video and you compare it to a belt-fed machine gun, 240, there's absolutely no question it's the same. When you compare that to a bump fire, nothing. The guys who immediately came out with videos about bump fire, they made a bunch of assumptions. They assumed that because fully automatic was illegal, that this guy couldn't have had it and didn't have it. They assumed that he had a bump fire stock because one guy's video that I watched said, hey, if you listen, you can hear the sound go up and down. Well, the sound goes up and down, but he's trying to imply that the rate of fire was increasing and decreasing. I've listened to it too many times. It was not. So what's going on here? I'll just paint a scenario that is just out in left field. I don't condone it. I can't say if it's true or not. It's just a theory that some people planted. So let's just say for a minute you get somebody like George Soros, and say you get these radical lefties, and they are so frustrated that they just cannot implement their communist strategy. They cannot disarm America. And until they disarm America, they cannot impose this radical socialism that George Soros wants. George Soros operated under the Nazi regime as a Jew. He sold his soul, and he helped the Nazis round up Jews, confiscate all of their goods, and kill them, incarcerate them, steal their stuff, and sell it. Or whatever. He was involved with this. Apparently, he wants to bring back the good old days and do it again. He's a crazed maniac. He's done many, many bad things for this country. I've gone over that lately. So let's just say hypothetically, money was no object. And another example of this is 9/11. I mean, right before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld from the Department of Defense said, hey, by the way, now this is less than 12 hours or let's see, more like, you know, less than 24 hours before the 9/11 attacks hit. He goes before Congress in an emergency meeting and says, hey, by the way, we've lost $2.3 trillion. I know it's a problem. I'm going to find it. Don't worry about it, guys. I'll take care of it. The next day, 9/11 hits, and all the locations that would be holding evidence that would assist in the search for this money and the investigation have been destroyed. The investigation is officially called off. The money's written off. No one knows where it went, where, how, when, why, and nor do they care. Because after all, it's just taxpayer dollars, and they're just numbers anyway. So if money is no object, so then, you know, then there's people that theorize that, you know, all kinds of theories on what happened on 9/11. One being that they'd intercepted information that these terrorists were going to try to pull off this plane crash. And the people for a New American Century, PNAC, were able, because they were all government officials from Cheney to Rumsfeld to, you know, everybody in between, they were able to orchestrate the collapse of the towers and a bunch of other things around this event, around the timing of this event. They could have even added planes to the scenario. They could have simplified the situation and made it easier for them to get them or whatever, okay? And then with that kind of money, everything works out fine. The guy who owned the buildings quadrupled his terrorist insurance just a couple months before. Different rules and regs were put out as far as scrambling jets once communication is lost with commercial aircraft. So they had to have the approval of a high-ranking official. And that day of 9/11, they were unable to get it. They were running simultaneously with the 9/11 event. They were running drills. They were running practice, whatever you call it. I can't think of the word right now. I do that every now and then, and I hate it. Simulations, that's what it was. They were running simulations of the exact event that was taking place. So when all this stuff was going on in the skies, they didn't know if it was real or fake, etc. And everything went to hell in a handbasket. In this event, let's just say more than anything, they want a white male who's absolutely got no history at all to do this mass shooting because they can say, look, no one's safe. We're safe from no one. We've got to give up our essential liberty in the name of security. And the first place that starts is by banning our guns, okay? So let's just be hypothetical. There's people, there's all kinds of calls that say there was two shooters, that someone saw dark-skinned individuals, Asians, Arabs, whatever they call them, different views. There's trained special operations officials, all of them, that say that is a machine gun and there was two guns firing and so on, okay? And then there's all kinds of arguments to go along with that. Whether it's true or not, I don't even know. Just kind of laying it out. And by the way, YouTube and Twitter, everybody's pulling down videos of people trying to explain the conspiracy theories on the Vegas shooter. They're trying to, well, YouTube has announced that they're no longer going to even allow it up. They're going to take them all down. They're only going with legitimate news sources, which means state-run and state-operated news sources. So you're not going to even be able to get this information anymore, which is a concern. Google's blocking it, etc. So I'll just go straight to the shoot. So the theory, one theory is that they want to put this together. They've got all the money and resources. They track this guy who's perfect on paper. He's clean. There's nothing. So let's say they kidnap this guy in a casino or whatever. and, you know, by tracking prostitutes with him or whatever. And they get this guy and they have this shooting plan and they catch this guy and they capture him. They hold him and they keep him there. And I don't know when they kill him or shoot him, but basically they execute this great big shooting. They frame the guy. They put guns in his car. You know, they've got keys to his house, whatever. I mean, they go and put guns in his house, guns in the room, stuff in the car, and you start going, well, boy, that's an awful lot of work. Folks, that's not an awful lot of work. I mean, if this is what your whole goal is, it's no work at all. I mean, go watch Hollywood. Watch what they come up with in Hollywood. So then they basically do this shooting. They have an escape route plan, which may be why the security guard got shot, and they get out of there. You know, they could have been staying in another room down the hall. They could have done anything. They could have patched into the cameras. There's rumors now that the hall cameras went out during this event. This is why they can't come up with any evidence of this guy coming and going from the room with the guns. You notice that? They're unable to come up with anything on this guy. Why? Because he's not the one that maybe transported the weapons. Folks, I am not saying this is true. I'm just laying it out there. And that they used him as a shill to try to get this stuff through. Immediately, ISIS took claim. They doubled down. That's another interesting concept. Just things to think about. You know, it just doesn't make sense. The other thing was people that were on site said that when those bullets were hitting the ground, they were kicking up rocks and dust to the point that they were literally burying shrapnel in people's bodies. A 223, which is what, or AK-47, it just doesn't do that, okay? 223s don't do that. They're basically 22s with a little more gunpowder on them. So just, it's something to think about. I think what's really, you have to understand that the agenda is so great that there are people that would happily go to any extent to get this stuff done and through. If you're obsessed with winning, there is no limit. If you are obsessed with winning at all costs, which the left, and especially the extreme communistic left, is absolutely dedicated to, cost is, you know, it's easy to find the George Soroses of the world that are worth, you know, tens of billions of dollars and, you know, it's just irrelevant. They can do whatever they want. They've got people dedicated, looking forward to it. There's so many, you know, historical examples of this. It's not even funny. And the government has been involved or not. It doesn't matter. Government officials, they could work for the government and be working a separate agenda. Or it could just be private individuals that have an agenda that they want communism to be imposed, like George Soros, who's just a radical sick person who loves to be a puppeteer. He loves to take down governments. He loves to take down systems. And if that's all he dedicates himself to, the greatest con of all for that man would be to take the U.S. government down, to even be able to take away our civil rights. George Soros went through the Nazi occupation and takeover and genocide in Germany. He went through it. And prior to that, they disarmed the people. Do you not think that that man, and by the way, he's never spoken out negatively against it. He's never said how heinous it was. He never expressed regret. As a matter of fact, he laughs and brags about being involved in the genocide of his own people. Clearly, do research. You'll find out I'm telling the truth. He's taken four countries down. He tried to take, economically, he tried to take Hong Kong down, which would have been huge on a global scale. He wants to destroy the globe. He gets a thrill out of this stuff. Can't explain why, but he always sets himself up to make big bucks. You know, I suppose they could figure out what is going to pay as far as stocks go, what stocks are going to get hit bad by this and see who shorted them. Or whatever. So it's just food for fodder, something to think about. But you got to understand, they're coming up with nothing. His brother's like, where in the world these guns come from? This is not him. He wasn't like this at all. There is no evidence at all whatsoever. Okay? So they're saying, yeah, I won't even go much more on that. Just something to really think about. Okay? So ponder that, I guess. Think about it. Understand now that the web, all the major players on the web are blocking this stuff. You know, we've seen, just as a quick note along a similar line of thought, I guess, this Henry Weinstein, okay? He's some big Hollywood producer that made movies that were famous and great, and he's a very sick sexual predator. He apparently has what they call a casting couch, which I didn't know what that was till today, that apparently means you get girls in and basically say, if you want to be in my movies, then you will do these things with me, sexual whatever, very extreme. He was extraordinarily high pressure, just radically, ridiculously high pressure. They've got some audio of it from another FBI sting earlier. And this man was unbelievably high pressure on these poor women. They're trying so hard to preserve their career. They want a break. And this man is trying so hard to take advantage of them and use them sexually. And he's a very sick man. But the media comes out and they start to initially attack his friends and people, politicians who've received his support over the years. And they're attacking his friends and constituent relations with the fact that they didn't immediately have a knee-jerk reaction to go run the guy down, trash talk him, etc. And this frustrates me, and here's why. First of all, a friend doesn't do that, okay? The Bible's very clear. Love is patient and kind. It's not jealous or boastful, etc. Love hopes all things, believes all things, right? It wants what's best. There's a friend, it says in the Bible, that stands closer than a brother. There's all these things about love hides, love conceals a secret. Love, it doesn't mean that we enable people in their sin, but what it means is we are not in the business of destroying. Love does not rejoice in wrong. Okay, so here's the quick little lesson out of this. They're harassing. This is politics. This is they're like saying, they're telling you who you should like, who you should speak against. You know, when Trump had his video come out about his comment about, hey, you know, when you're rich, you know, women will do anything. And there's times I could walk up and, you know, he says, grab a certain part of their body, which is obviously not a very good choice of words. But, you know, essentially, then they're telling everybody on the right, turn on him, speak out against him, you know, turn your back on him. Let's, you know, bail out on him, abandon him, betray him. And then all these weak politicians come out and do it. OK, that's not what friends do. OK, if I have a good friend and I'm loyal to that person and I find out he did something really stupid, especially in Trump's case, just said something really, really rank and really, really dumb, you know, that doesn't instantly mean that's it. I'm going to not only not be your friend, I'm going to betray you. I'm going to destroy you. I'm going to do everything in my power to ruin your life and destroy your aspirations. Seriously? I mean, seriously? Is that a biblical friend? Is that a biblical spirit? No, not at all. And it's the same as they're doing on the other. It's driven me nuts. They want you to be a fair weather friend, to be into the false illusion of self-preservation at all times. Folks, do not be that kind of a friend. That is not a friend, okay? That a friend sticks by you through thick and thin. And the Bible has many verses about what a true friend is like, you know, and it's so important to me that, you know, and you might be listening and going, hey, that's sin, Kevin. I mean, we have to stand up against sin. Folks, we all sin. Not saying it's okay. Not saying Henry Weinstein isn't an incredibly sick man. Everything he did was sick to the core. I wasn't sure until I heard some audio and I'm like, bad man. Okay. Granted, when things, you know, if you just have a business relationship with a guy and this comes out, you're a wise man will wait just until they have all the facts, just like this Vegas shooter. They've got the left going bonkers over bump stocks on the Vegas shooting before we have any evidence that that's what he used to do this at all. Wait. be patient. That's what a wise man does before he opens his big mouth. You know, Proverbs 18 says, a man of many companions may come to ruin. It says, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. What do you think that means? You know what that means? There was a situation years back where there was a mayor in a town where I went to church, okay? And this mayor was getting destroyed by the media for something that, you know, I didn't know much about it. I wasn't involved so much in keeping up with local politics. And I was an usher at the church. And we'd collected all the, you know, all the offerings, and we were in back doing the counting and all that. And two of these ushers were just really speaking disrespectful and inappropriate about this guy. And I didn't know the guy, and I didn't really know the story too much, but I said, what are you guys doing? Why are you doing this? This is so wrong. And they literally were like, well, he did this, he did that. How do you know? Aren't they just allegations? Well, yeah, there's no evidence. Okay. And I'm like, and plus, as the body of Christ, why are you not supporting this guy and talking to him? So, you know, they both just were very flippant, and they both just tossed it aside. And I just took it to heart. It meant something to me because, you know, in my years in my life, God has let me have an interesting journey. I've gone through a few situations when I was younger, especially when I had no parental support, where I got falsely accused of a couple things that were pretty bad. One was basically breaking into a house that I had been responsible for mowing, and another guy had done it, another kid that knew I was responsible for the home, and you know, it ended up over time working itself out. But the thing is I got falsely accused of doing that, and I had no real friends because my friends' parents and stuff were like, you know, oh, stay away. And there's not a more bad feeling, a more negative feeling. This is why thou shalt not bear false witness is so prevalent. This is a commandment that we so quickly blow off, and we need to philosophize the commandments, not just say, well, that one says don't lie. No, it says don't bear false witness. That means don't say something about somebody that A, is not true, or B, you don't know is true, okay? So people, you know, didn't come behind and protect my back, and, you know, over time, truth comes out and all that. But the point is, I learned at that point the person I wanted to be. God, you know, taught me these things through different experiences. So when I see these events take place and I see people like this, it's very frustrating to me because it says here in Proverbs 18, a man of many companions, you could have tons of friends, and it says you may come to ruin. And then it tells you about this one friend, but there is a friend, not many friends. There's a friend who sticks closer than a brother. God is exalting that friend. He's saying it's good. Friendship is a powerful thing. You know, we get into John. Greater love has no one than this. What? That someone lays down his life for his friends. I mean, that's a pretty big deal, right? Iron sharpens iron. One man sharpens another. A friend loves in Proverbs at all times, right? A brother is born for adversity. Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. There's where friends take you the other direction. He who withholds kindness from a friend forsakes the fear of the Almighty. You know, that's Job, isn't it? Where he's like, if you hold back good from a friend, you don't fear God because God wants you to be a good friend. Folks, I'll just leave it at this. If you have a friend that has been good to you over the years, do something for them. Take them to dinner. Buy them a card. Tell them how important that loyalty is. If you've got the kind of friend that's going to stand by you through thick and thin, a real friend that's going to give you the benefit of the doubt, I'll tell you the other thing too, folks. I've seen a lot of this stuff over the years. If you're a friend, okay, don't be, you know, if you're a friend and something gets said about your friend, don't sit there and go, and the other person is not your friend. Don't go, well, you know, there's two sides to every story, and don't be skeptical and doubt your friend. What does love do? Love believes all things, right? It hopes all things. What does that mean? That means that if you have the attitude, well, you know, Kevin, the reason that I really want to be skeptical is I just don't want to get burned. I've been burned a lot of times by people lying to me. And it just, you know, I've just gotten to the point where I just want to be really balanced and really fair. You're not balanced and fair. You're biased and annoying. The Bible tells you, trust. What if you get burned again? So what? It's not about you. It's about them. Trust. If you have a spouse who's done wrong, but he's straightened up his life, trust. Your job is not to be the police. Your job is to trust and love and let Christ deal with it. If someone's going to do something wrong to you or somebody else, within reason, you trust. Okay, now, if you know someone, if you've got a child who's on meth and they keep breaking into your house, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when you, you know, have every reason to trust, but you just won't. You need to trust the other person. You give them that trust because it is not our job to try to sit and predict everything bad and wrong somebody's going to do. If they do us wrong, God will sort it out, and so will the consequences come. But nothing is more encouraging to somebody than to have your faith and trust in them. That is why encouragement has the word courage. You build courage up when you help somebody feel good about themselves. That's what we're supposed to do when it says encourage one another. And to discourage takes it out. If somebody's doing right, one of the worst things that can happen in a marriage is false accusations about various behavior, okay? And, you know, there's all kinds we won't get into, but false accusations about a behavior. You are so much better off trusting and finding out the person fell than distrusting and finding out you're wrong. When you distrust, you destroy the relationship. When you trust, you build it up. You're not hurting a thing. You know, if it doesn't come down to physical harm, obviously. Encourage one another, trust one another, believe in them. Give them that power, empower them. If someone believes in somebody over and over again as they fail, that encourages them to become a better person. If somebody's just discouraged all the time with skepticism and rebuke and judgmentalism and elitism, you'll destroy a person. You can literally force somebody to do exactly what you're afraid they will do. And so I'll just leave it at that. I really wanted to get into the history of precious metals today, but apparently the Holy Spirit led me a different direction on that, and so be it. That's fine. I do want to say, folks, I am regretting not doing a better job of financial education. One thing I really want to bring up. Silver is a great value, great upside, etc. We have a few thousand silver dollars available that are the single best silver investment you can buy. Silver is right now, just say ballpark $17 a troy ounce, okay? You can buy silver piece dollars at about 18 bucks a piece, okay? So basically they're a dollar over the spot price. These are a terrific value. If you want a good silver investment, get in here now. They will not last. When I mention stuff on the show like this, folks, it goes immediately. We've got those. We've got a little bit nicer silver dollars available. The value is good, folks. It's the best way to own silver. Here's why. They're antique. They're pre-33. They've never been confiscated. You don't have to worry about that. But basically, you get the upside of the coin market, the desirability of recognition. Everyone knows what they are. Everyone wants them. They're amazing. They're beautiful. They're part of American history. But you're also getting the silver. Silver goes up, you make the money. Coins go up, you make the money. What's better is you can get amplified growth. These silver dollars in the last couple decades have been as high as 5 times their silver content. And yet right now, they're only a dollar, less than a dollar over the spot price, like 75 cents over the spot price. So if you really want just a good, solid, precious metals-based investment, come in and buy some bags of these peace dollars. You can spend whatever you want. You can spend $1,000, $2,000, whatever. But I'm just telling you right now, these are available. I guarantee you they'll be gone by this weekend. If you just want a quick, easy, good silver investment, just somewhere to park your money for a while. If you've got money in savings or whatever, just park it in these. Folks, I sincerely believe we're right around the corner from some great growth. Metals have had it, you know, they've had a nice solid year. They're where God wants you to have your money. So just hear, you know, hear me out on that. It's a great investment. If you want to put a little more money in, we'll start with that. We'll balance you out. We'll give you some other stuff related to gold. We call this semi-numismatic, okay? They're not collectible. They are collectible, but the price is not reflected. You're buying them as basically a bullion product, and they're collectible. These same silver dollars online from the lowest selling dealer I've found out there are almost $22 a piece, okay? We're selling them around $18. Terrific value. Wholesale dealers are buying them at 19 and a quarter. I've got a quantity. I don't want to mess with it. I love to pass this on to my clients and consumers. It's just something available. So if you just want a good, simple, great investment, and like I said, we have coins that are almost uncirculated, the same and uncirculated and almost uncirculated. They're just, I think, a couple bucks more. Those are available too. As far as dollars go, we specialize in them. I wholesale them to the public. We'll give you a great deal. Give us a call, 444-0044, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN, or through the website at coinsplus.com. Once again, these will not last long. If you're interested in them, just give us a call or come on in, and we'll take care of you. Just give us a call so to make sure they're not gone beforehand. And last, again, if you've got money just sitting out there in savings, and especially if it's a fair amount, if it's just a little cash reserve, no biggie. If you've got a fair amount, deal with it. 401ks and IRAs, folks, we take care of those for you. They're easy. Our process is simple. Give us a call. Let us deal with it. Preserve and protect your assets. You know, you don't want to buy anything when the market's exploding. You want to buy when it's cheap. Right now, that's where we're at on metals and coins. So give us a call. Thanks again for tuning in. I really appreciate your support. I hope, you know, God bless. Pray for us. We'll pray for you. Take care. Bye-bye. See you Friday. Bye.